sacrificing their children to Moloch, just like today. Slaying the children in the valleys under the cliffs of the rocks. Inflaming yourselves with idols under every green tree, because they're having wanton sex. And when they get pregnant, they kill the kids, so they just go have more sex. And they did have plants and things that they could eat that caused abortions back then. I don't know what those plants are, but Procopius wrote about it in his Secret History. That the Emperor Justinian's wife was a whore and gave herself abortions by eating certain plants. So it's like today we can look around ourselves today and see what they were going through back then. So Yahweh's promising to declare the righteousness of his people and that their works won't profit them. In other words, he's threatening to judge them. And basically telling them that those with a contrite and humble spirit, that they'll be watched out for and do okay. The meek inherit the earth, right? And there is no peace to the wicked. In other words, by your fruits you know them. This Isaiah is teaching the same thing that Christ taught. Yeah, I would bet culture critic. I mean, I don't know the whole exactly what plants they used. Procopius didn't mention, but he did mention that eating certain plants would induce a miscarriage or an abortion, as we would call it, because it's purposeful.
Some Jew on Twitter was talking about this probably a week or two ago. I think I mentioned it in the chat.
Oh, I don't see anything here that would allow a Christian to approve of abortion. But so many Jews have come out and claimed that abortion is some kind of Jewish right. But that's their religion.
Well, it should be a Jewish right.
Yeah, right.
As many as possible.
They don't want abortion for their own kids. They only want abortion for yours.
Actually, I think that's one of the reasons behind the push. Because I remember like about 5 years ago or so, there was this this Haitian woman that came on. And she kind of shocked these other liberal women, stating that it was actually black women who were the biggest users of planned parenthood.
Okay. I looked at the statistics somebody posted in a chat the other day, or maybe it was the Florida League chat. There's a Florida League of the South chat I'm involved in. And there is a higher total of white abortions every year than black abortions. But this per capita, if you want to believe that niggers are only 13% of the population or even 15 or 20, then niggers abort their children at a higher frequency than whites.
Yeah, I don't believe the census there.
Neither do I.
Same with the 2% Jew population. That's shit.
Yeah, I think niggers are like 20% at least, maybe 25.
I think Jews are 5 to 10 at least.
Oh,
a lot. Maybe it's just where I live.
No, I believe they're a lot higher than that. 2% of the Jews go to synagogue.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And the real number is probably more like 20. I swear, the country is less than half white now, once you eliminate the whites that aren't really white.
The Hispanics and everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, well, Clinton did that shit. When I was a young cop, you were black, white, Hispanic, Asian, or other.
Yeah, my county's 38% white, I think, now.
But under Bill Clinton, the FBI changed the crime reporting statistics to be either black, white, Asian, white Hispanic, or black Hispanic.
Yep. And no Jews. Jews aren't even listed.
And Arabs are classified as white because they're not black. And
right.
Most Hispanics, even if they're
brown
as hell, are not going to want to be called black Hispanic. They're not going to be wanted to call black. That they would rebel against that because that they think they're better than niggers.
Yeah,
so I'm sure they wouldn't claim to be black Hispanic.
No, definitely not.
That's like that that Sammy Sosa when he started making money in the baseball, he bleached his fucking skin white.
Yeah,
nigger.
So do all the black entertainers.
Yeah, apparently yes. it's huge in Jamaica.
Well, I'll bet that at least half the people considered white on the census are not white at all.
No, definitely not. This country is probably, I mean, I'm being nice, probably 40% white at this point. Maybe 45.
Yeah, if we got 40.
Okay, verse 11.
There would be other groups to eliminate as well, like Sicilians, haters, South Americans that think they're white, but they're really not. There's a lot of white lines there.
The quote-unquote white Cubans here.
Yeah, well, I never really saw a white Cuban. And the population of Havana was half Jewish in the 1500s. By the end of the 1500s. Well, the wicked elect of Trouble C cannot rest. It's all around us today. 58 is cool, Mark.
And the audio it's coming through on your mic when you're cutting.
Again?
Yeah, bad.
How about now?
Let's see. Verse 11. And of whom hast thou been afraid or feared that thou hast lied and hast not remembered me, nor laid it to thy heart? Not I held my peace even of old, and thou fearest me not? I will declare thy righteousness and thy works, for they shall not profit thee. When thou criest, let thy companies deliver thee, but the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them. But he that putteth his trust in me shall possess thee. Land and shall inherit my holy mountain and shall say, cast ye up, Cast ye up, prepare the way. Take up the stumbling block out of the way of my people. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of the contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. For I will not contend forever, neither will I be always wroth. For the spirit should fail before me, and the souls which I have made. For the iniquity of his covetousness was I wroth, and smote him. I hid me and was wroth, and he went on frowardly in the way of his heart. I have seen his ways and will heal him. I will lead him also and restore comforts unto him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips, peace, peace to him that is far off and to him that is near, saith Yahweh, and I will heal him. But the wicked are like the troubled sea, when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, saith Yahweh, to the wicked.
I'm sorry, when you stopped before you read this portion, I thought you were finished with the chapter because you said end of chapter 57. I thought you did. But that's fine. Yeah, you know, in Amos, Yahweh promised that he would sift the house of Israel like corn through a sieve. I'm looking for that passage, but my keyboard's not cooperating. That's in Amos chapter 9, verse 9. I will sift the house of Israel among all nations like as corn is sifted in a sieve. And here I think we see that process where he's addressing the children of Israel and saying that they're going to be made righteous, but he's also saying there's no peace to the wicked, that's how he's going to sift the house of Israel, that they're going to die in wars and be eliminated before his people go to their final destination. That's why I read that. That's why I read that prophecy in Amos, and this here seems to agree with it fully. If I was writing a commentary on this chapter, that's what I would write. The meek inherit the earth, and the contrite ones, and those who forsake these sins for which Israel is being punished, they will go on into the new lands and survive the captivity, and the wicked won't, because there's no peace to the wicked. So we wonder why we've had war for thousands of years, and basically this accounts for it. All those tribes that competed with each other for the land in Europe and slaughtered each other. We think from our perspective that it's senseless. And Isaiah here is explaining it. But it's the will of God to eliminate the wicked. But also at the beginning of this chapter, sometimes the good are taken out of the way so that they don't suffer the punishments that are going to come upon them. So death isn't always a punishment. And we don't know until we get to the other side, if we get there. So when you see somebody die prematurely, as it says here in the beginning of this chapter, you can't always imagine that they were simply being punished for some sin. Sometimes it's mercy.
User entered your channel.
Yeah, a lot of evil people live for a really long time.
Yep.
Isaiah 58.
Why not?
Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, in the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to Yahweh. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of our fast, ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day, to make your voice to be heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush, and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to Yahweh? Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thy own flesh? Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of Yahweh shall be thy reward. Reward.
Then rearward. Yahweh shall be thy rearward. In other words, he has your back. He'll watch your back.
R-E-R-E-W-A-R-D.
Rearward. Yeah, it's an archaic way of spelling R-E-A-R-W-A-R-D.
Okay. Then shalt thou call, and Yahweh shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. If thou take away from the midst of the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity. And if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as the noonday. End of verse 10.
And one of the things the children of Israel were being punished for was becoming more or less a commercial society with a certain class of men that were only looking out for their own business interests, for their own profit. And this comes out more in Amos than it did in Isaiah. Even though we could see it here in Isaiah, it makes this chapter would make a lot more sense reading Amos. And it's in Amos chapter 2 in verses 6 and 7. For thus saith Yahweh, for three transgressions of Israel and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they sold the righteous for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes, that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek, and on and on. And it's again in Isaiah chapter, I'm sorry, in Amos chapter 5, for as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and you take away from him burdens of wheat. And then in the next verse, because I'm trying to make this quick, for I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor from the in the gate from their right. The gate of the cities, the gate at the market end of the city was where the business and courts, suits, lawsuits, and things like that were heard, where criminals were tried. It was always at the gate of ancient cities where the market was that the judges of the city would sit. And you see that in the book of Acts. Paul mentions that being tried in the gate of the city on at least one occasion. So that's what's going on there. And again in Amos chapter 8 in verses 4 through 6, hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone? In other words, they want the feast to get over with so that they could start trading again, right? When will the new moon be gone that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great? In other words, they're inflating their prices and falsifying the balance by deceit, selling you 12 ounces of pasta for the price of 16. That we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes. Yeah, and sell the refuse of the wheat. In other words, the refuse, what's left over, or the part you would usually throw away, and they would sell that to the poor. So all through Amos is the same message that the children of Israel had turned to commercialization and to this concept of there was no more community, to this concept of economic independence and self-realization, which is basically found in humanism, that they were every man for himself and the hell with the poor, and the poor of their own communities and the poor of their own people. That's the same situation we're in again today. So we should hope for judgment soon. That's the society that capitalism creates.
Well, just as long as I can get to the Walmart beforehand, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. Every man in this society is out for his own profit. If you read Amos, it was the same way then. And that's reflected here in Isaiah 57. Individualism. That's the word I was looking for. Capitalism creates individualism. Unchecked capitalism. And we have it again today. So in verse 10, and if you shall draw out your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul. In other words, you take care of your brethren that are downtrodden. You take care of your brethren that are needy. If you do that, then Yahweh shall guide thee continually and satisfy thy soul with drought and make fat thy bones. If you don't do that, you're going to be punished. If you do do it, then he's going to look out for you. That's a hard lesson, but it works. And even today, most people in Christian identity don't really understand it.
I can attest that if you're not selfish and greedy, God will look out for you.
Yeah, he will. Even when we got burned by the poor we were trying to help, I believe he looked out for us. Brother Ryan and Sonny Eames and people like that.
Not for self, but for others.
Right. It's not communism. It's not Marxism. It's Christian charity. I mean, none of us have to give all our money away. If you look at the lesson with Zacharias, the tax collector in the New Testament, he told Christ, and he was evidently a very wealthy man. He told Christ he would give away half of his wealth. Well, that would still leave him a pretty wealthy guy. And if he ever defrauded anybody, he would pay him back four times or whatever he said. He would still be a very wealthy man. He wasn't compelled to give away all of his wealth. You have a right to keep your wealth. But it's a greater blessing if you're generous. It's hard to determine who in life is worth it and who in life isn't. I mean, we thought Brother Ryan was worth it. We thought Sonny Eames were worth it. We got burned both times. That's the way life is. But if you don't take that chance, you might reject helping a genuinely good person. And that's to your, that's a problem. That's to your discredit. I mean, not that we can discredit each other, but Yahweh will do the discrediting.
Verse 11.
Yeah, even though I just read it, but that's fine. You could read it. It was the conclusion of what I said about the first 10 verses, right?
Verse 12. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the paths to dwell in. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight in thyself, in Yahweh, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob, thy father, for the mouth of Yahweh hath spoken it. End of 58.
Well, 6 years ago, almost six and a half, when I did my part two of my commentary on Paul's epistle to the Corinthians, no, to the Philippians, I'm sorry. I titled it Repairers of the Breach. Repairers of the Breach. Here you learn how to repair the breach, not between merely yourself and God, but between your people and God. He's telling the people that look out for their own kind here, that look out for their brother and take care of their brethren, that their children are going to go on out of the captivity, and their children are going to populate the land. And they will be repairers of the breach if they do that. Christ said the same thing. Paul of Tarsus said the same thing all throughout the New Testament, that you win your people over through good works, and that's how you repair the breach. By showing your brethren that there's a better way. Not to be caught up in the evil capitalist world, but there's a better way. So those people have the potential to be the repairers of the breach and the restorers of paths to dwell in. But they were also told to keep that Sabbath, just like back there in Isaiah chapter 56 that we covered last week. He's talking to the children of Israel. He's not talking to literal eunuchs and literal strangers. He's talking to the children of Israel in captivity who were estranged from him. And now he's showing them how to repair the breach.
So in 13, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day. So the beginning of that sentence, it sounds like the person is turning away and going away from the Sabbath. And
they were evidently for a long time abusing the Sabbaths. And the second portion of it defines what he means by the first, because they were abusing the Sabbaths. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, because the Sabbath isn't a day to do your own pleasure. The Sabbath isn't supposed to be a day to sit around and watch niggers play football. There's better things that people could do on a Sabbath that we don't do because we all want to watch niggers play football. So they go to church for an hour, and then they watch niggers for 12.
So that must be some kind of an idiom, right?
I'm sorry?
The first part of that sentence must be some kind of an idiom. If thou turn away thy foot.
No, because he's talking in their context, and you're not sitting in their context listening. Put yourself in their context. When they had all become pagan, And they were all screwing up on the Sabbath day, doing their own pleasure. And he's telling them, if you'd stop that and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh. So in other words, restore the Sabbath to its original purpose instead of watching niggers play football all day. You're reading this, but you're not putting yourself in their context. You have to think of that context that they're in, because they weren't keeping the Sabbath. They were profaning the Sabbaths.
Yeah, I see that.
Turn your foot away, as in like walk away? Like walking away, turning your back?
Well, walking away from the way you've always celebrated them, yeah.
Okay.
Ezekiel chapter 22, her priests have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. They put no difference between the holy and the profane. Neither have they showed any difference between the unclean and the clean, and have hid their eyes from my Sabbaths, and I am profaned among them. That's the context that he's speaking within here in Isaiah chapter 58. If he was talking to you today, he might say, if you turn your foot away from those Sundays, from doing your pleasure on my holy day. How about that? In colloquial language. And call the Sabbath, in other words, treat the Sabbath like it's a day of delight, the holy of Yahweh, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing mine own ways, which is to sit around drinking beer and watching niggers on TV all day, nor finding mine own pleasure, which is to be lusting over your neighbor's wives and their titties popping out of dresses in church. It's everything today is fucked up. Everything back then was fucked up too. Put yourself in their position when you're reading this, and it'll be a lot more understandable.
Bill, are we supposed to still practice a Sabbath today?
Every day is a Sabbath. We can't keep a proper Sabbath today. We can. It's good to keep a Sabbath, but we can't keep the proper Sabbath on the right day. We can't do it. So you should keep your own Sabbath. And as Paul said in Romans chapter 14, some men observe a day and other men observe every day. Every day should be a Sabbath. In other words, you should seek to do God's will every day. So if you have a day a week to set aside, that's fine. But it's never going to be the proper Sabbath day because we can't keep it today. That Sabbath day only works when the entire nation keeps it. It don't work otherwise.
Yeah, not only that, the calendars are screwed up and everything else.
Right. It's not the same calendar. And we can't get on that calendar because you wouldn't have a job if you tried to get on that calendar.
Right.
If the way I'm convinced that the calendar worked is that every spring solstice marked the first day of the new year going into that evening. That evening was, and through the next day, was the first day of the new year. When I say evening, I'm saying after the sun goes down and towards midnight, because our clocks aren't off by that much, that would be the first day of the year until the next evening. And the 14th day of the year, the way the spring solstice is, I'm sorry, the spring equinox is now, is like March 20th or March 21st, and the 14th day of the year starts the Passover, and that's April 3rd just about every damn year. It's April 3rd. The calendar, think about this, the Feast of the First Fruits was 7 weeks after the Feast of Weeks, which was the Feast of First Fruits, the Pentecost, was 7 weeks after Passover.
Microphone activated.
So these people were an agrarian community that depended on the first fruits of the wheat to be ready on the Feast of Pentecost or on the Feast of First Fruits 49 days after the Passover.
Yeah, and it was accurate.
The way the Catholics and the Jews have Passover, Easter, whatever the hell they call it, and the Orthotards, it jumps by as much as a month every year. It could be a month off from 1 year to another. It could be 28, 29 days off from 1 year to another. How the fuck do you have the wheat ready 1 year, 7 weeks later, and the next year, 7 weeks later? It won't be first fruits. It'll be dead and rotten in the fields.
Yeah, it'll be December.
It ain't going to work. You have to have a constant calendar that works with agriculture because it just happens to be an agricultural society. And those three feasts, Passover, First Fruits, and Tabernacles, are based on the agricultural calendar. And the calendar has to work with the natural cycle of the year, or your shit's not going to be ready. You're going to be at the Feast of Tabernacles, and the harvest ain't for another month, the way the friggin' Catholics do it. That's ridiculous, and the way the Jews do it. But the Jews never planted anything in the first place. You're going to be screwed. You're going to have a Feast of First Fruits and the wheat ain't even close to being ripe, or you're going to have a Feast of Tabernacles and nothing's ready to be picked. That shit don't work, man. That spring solstice had to be the first day of the year. That Passover had to be April 3rd every year on our April 3rd, roughly, maybe give or take a day. And then that first fruits would be on like May 29th every year, May 28th every year. And you know when you plant your shit in the field at the beginning of the year that it's going to be ready by May 28th or May 29th or whatever date it would be, 49 days from April 3rd, right? So then when it comes time for the Feast of Tabernacles, and that's a harvest feast, and you know that all your crops are going to be ready for harvest by then, and your year's over with. And you celebrate at the end of the year for a week, and it's over with. There's no way that the Jew calendar could possibly work in an agricultural society, or the Catholic Easter calendar, or the Orthodox Easter calendar. That's never going to work, ever.
Yeah, farmers know pretty much with precision when everything's supposed to happen with their crops.
And right.
Yeah, it never lines exactly up with the calendar. Yeah,
even with
never.
A little bad weather, they know. And right. And you have to know. Because nature doesn't wait for you. We can't get ripe yet. The fruit's going to think it can't get ripe yet because you ain't ready to go pick it. You can sit on your ass all year, but that fruit's getting ripe at the same time it did last year. So that's the calendar. And it had to be that way. All of that it's just nature. It's God's creation. There's no getting around it.
Esau Edom has sown one thing in the field, and that is certainly lies and deceit.
Yeah. Yep. We probably have a lot more now than they did then. I don't know. Maybe we didn't. Maybe it was just pretty screwed up then too. Mud sharks and oil drillers all over the place. But we're there again.
Yeah, I think really the only thing that may have changed is some of the technology. That's about it. I think everything else is pretty much the same.
Yeah, the people certainly are the same. They're no smarter and they're really no dumber, but they're no smarter. We think we're smart. People today think they're smart. They think they're much more brilliant than their ancestors. But the truth is that 100 years ago, most people were smarter than us. 100 years ago, most young men in school could understand Latin and Greek, and maybe 200 years ago understood Latin and Greek, had a much better grip on history than we have today, than the average person has today.
User in your
yeah, they had a huge down. Advantages.
Yeah, my grandfather was a dumb redneck, and he was the most brilliant man I've ever met.
Yeah, because they learned from the Bible. They read the Bible all the time, that they had a lot more common wisdom handed down from their own ancestors.
They did
today,
work that mattered.
Ever since the 50s, teenagers have been quote-unquote rebellious, which is all bullshit. Kids were never supposed to be rebellious.
People read more, and they had more conversations with their family and friends more often.
Absolutely. Yeah,
they sat at the dinner table together, right?
Yeah. Fathers and uncles taught their sons and nephews their trades, and instead of watching TV or niggers playing football all night, they'd go out to the garage and learn shop and shit like that. That don't happen anymore.
And people had more free time because they weren't as enslaved as today.
Right.
To, do their hobbies or learn something new, et cetera. Whereas now it's like you're so exhausted by the time you're done work and you travel back from work, et cetera.
Well, that's a lot of white people don't understand. Even though the Roman Catholic Church is seen as oppressive, That's the Jewish version. It really is. The Roman Catholic Church wasn't anywhere near as oppressive as today's government. But most people in the church structure of the medieval centuries did not work half a year. They have 180 friggin' feast days a year.
Yeah, they grew their crops, sold them, bartered, whatever, and then they had the rest of the year to do whatever they needed to do or whatever they wanted to do.
They had feast days throughout the year constantly. They had like 180 feast days throughout the year where the Catholic Church scheduled feasts.
User in your channel
for this saint, that saint. I mean, I'm not saying that's good, but the people had all that time off. They went to church and they had a feast in their community. They put on pageants and plays and things like that.
Everybody knew everybody
that are named after animals or colors came from roles that our ancestors played in the medieval pageants in their towns.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, you would have like feast days many times a month, maybe 10, 12 days a month, you'd have a feast day. It's just the way it was. And that gave people did not have to work in the fields on those days. And when the average serf that had a portion of land in a manor, which the lord of the manor, he was responsible to the lord of the manor. If there was a war, he might have to go to war for the lord of the manor. He might be conscripted. That's just the way it is. But otherwise, he gave about 20% of his produce in kind to the lord of the manor. He didn't have to give him cash. He gave him 20% in kind. That means if you had 10 steer last year and this year you had 4 more steer, you got to give one to the lord of the manor. If you have 5 acres of crops and they produce 1,000 bushels of grain, then you've got to give 200 bushels to the lord of the manor. But that's only a 20% tax rate. Look at what we pay today. And everything else that they needed, they got with barter.
I do a lot of stuff on barter.
User in your channel timed out.
And those 180 days they had off, those feast days and all their other spare time, that they were engaged in some sort of industry for their own profit that they didn't have to give to the lord of the manor.
User entered your channel.
So if your wife sat around sewing all night and made clothing and could sell or barter away some of it, you didn't have to give that to the lord of the manor, no. People were a hell of a lot more industrious in the Middle Ages than we are now. Now we commute 2 or 3 hours a day and work 8 or 9 hours a day and come home and just plop in front of the TV.
User in your channel timed out.
$59.
That's fine.
Behold, Yahweh's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither
user entered
your is
channel.
Ear heavy, that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies, your tongue
user
hath muttered
your channel
curses.
Timed out.
None calleth for justice, nor any pleadeth for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. They hatch
user entered your channel
cockatrice eggs and weave the spider's web. He that eateth of their eggs dieth, and that which is crushed breaketh out into a viper.
Yeah, today we call them nigglets and shit like that. I'm sorry.
Their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity, and the acts of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their goings. They have made, there is no judgment in their goings. They have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goeth therein shall not know peace. Therefore is judgment far from us. Neither doth justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. End of verse 10.
User entered your channel.
Paul of Tarsus cited this verse in this passage in Romans chapter 3, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness, their feet are swift to shed blood, destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace they have not known, there is no fear of God before their eyes, reading it from the King James Version. But we see the same words here. Paul was speaking of basically idolaters who had forsaken God, and that's what Isaiah is speaking of here, idolaters who have forsaken God, or even bastards that are the result of that idolatry, who are going to be weeded out, sifted as grain through a sieve.
User entered your channel.
All men are sinners, but all men aren't sinners to the same extent. We're all guilty of some sin, but we all bear some sin, but we're not sinners to the same extent.
User in your channel timed out.
Perhaps not being generous enough with the fruits of your hands, perhaps not User being kind enough towards your brethren. That's not quite as bad as race mixing and adultery, right? But this seems to be speaking of the most evil of the children of Israel and not just the ordinary sinner. They hatch cockatrices' eggs and weave the spider's web. Yahweh's actually speaking about their offspring. He's not speaking about parlor tricks. He's speaking about the wicked and Solomon and wisdom of Solomon. This was pretty clear that men that turn to sin and wickedness are ultimately going to race mix and spawn bastard children. Well, by this time, a lot of people in ancient Israel had already done that. So, I mean, they could be called to repentance, but the bastards are going to be weeded out from Isaiah's viewpoint. Even if it's not worded as strongly as it is in the Wisdom of Solomon.
User entered your channel.
So following that way, you shall not know peace, and therefore judgment is far from us. Neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. And that's another allusion to the prisoners in the prison house and darkness. we grope for the wall like the blind. That's the result of sin. If you won't repent of your sin, that's what you're going to do. And we could make parallels of that with today's situation also, because nobody wants to hear the truth anymore. Nobody wants to hear the truth. They don't know it, but they're groping the walls as if they had no eyes. They'd rather follow the Judeo-Christians and CNN and Fox News and believe what they hear there.
People these days have no idea what truth is anymore.
Right. And they'll embrace one truth one day and another truth the next day. They'll lean towards evangelical churches, and then all of a sudden they're freaking Buddhists or Mormons or whatever. Because something sounds better, they're so willing to shift to it. Jehovah's Witnesses. Or have no religion at all. They really do have no religion at all. Their religion is pop culture. It doesn't matter if you're a Buddhist, a Mormon, an evangelical Christian, or a Jehovah's Witness. Your real religion is pop culture, because that's how you live your life.
All right, whatever is socially acceptable, right?
And pop culture is entirely Jewish. I guess we can move on, Martin, if there's no other statements or questions.
Verse 11. We roar all like bears and mourn sore like doves. We look for judgment, but there is none. For salvation, but it is far off from us. For our transgressions are multiplied before thee, and our sins testify against us. For our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we know them. In transgressing and lying against Yahweh and departing away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood. And judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth far off. For truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey. And Yahweh saw it, and he displeased him that there was no judgment. And he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness is sustained him. For he put righteousness as a breastplate and an helmet of salvation upon his head. He put upon the garments of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. According to their deeds, accordingly he will repay fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the islands he will repay recompense. So shall they fear the name of Yahweh from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the spirit of Yahweh shall lift up a standard against him. And the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression, in Jacob saith Yahweh. As for me, this is my covenant with them, saith Yahweh, my spirit that is upon thee, and my words which I have put in thy mouth, shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of thy seed's seed, saith Yahweh, from henceforth and forever.
Well, somebody carried the word of God through to today, but this is, again, this is exactly what we face today, and this is actually what we hope will happen today. We're all waiting for this time now, and it may not come for another 100 years, but we're all waiting for it. When the enemy is in like a flood, they are here like a flood, or at least we think, from our perspective, it might get a lot worse. But this, he that turns from righteousness makes himself a prey. In the Wisdom of Solomon, it describes the wicked and how they want to live by their own law, and they forsake the law of God. They turn from God. They turn their backs on their own people. And this is in chapter 2. And I forget exactly how I translated it, but I know that I had a better translation for it. But I'll start with verse 10, where the wicked say to themselves, after they want to live by their own law, they say to themselves, let us oppress the poor righteous man. Let us not spare the widow. The same things we read a chapter or two ago in Isaiah, and this is what they do. And if you're righteous, you make yourself a prey for the wicked. Let us oppress the poor righteous man. Let us not spare the widow, nor reverence the ancient gray hairs of the aged. Let our strength be the law of justice. In other words, might is right. For that which is feeble is found to be nothing worth. In other words, the law of God is feeble because you can't use it to for your own gain. Therefore, let us lie in wait for the righteous because he is not for our turn. And I think the way I translated that was, let us lie in wait for the righteous because he is intractable to us. In other words, the wicked can't stand the righteous opposes him. So it goes on to say in Wisdom of Solomon chapter 2, verse 12, and he is clean contrary to our doings. He upbraids us with our offending the law and objects to our infamy, the transgressings of our education. And I think I'm sure I had a better translation for that too, but that's besides the point. When the wicked want to live by their own law and oppress the righteous, and we see the same thing here, the same concept here in Isaiah, that if in a sinful world, if you choose the path of righteousness, you make yourself a prey because the wicked are going to seek to oppress you and abuse you. That's always the way it is. That's a natural process that is inevitable every time you have a wicked society. Activated. That there's always going to be people that seek righteousness, that seek God, and they're going to be oppressed by the wicked.
Because they're an easy target because they project onto these people their own values, and they shouldn't be doing that because they don't recognize that these people are actually evil and they seek to do harm to them.
Right. Empathy and altruism. But we have to maintain our righteousness. I don't know where Martin stopped here. I don't want to get ahead of him again. But we have to, if you seek to please God, and if you really seek to be preserved in this world or in the next, it doesn't matter. We have to maintain our righteousness. You can go along with the wicked. You might still be resurrected, but you're going to be resurrected to eternal disgrace, eternal contempt. So we have to at least try to keep the law. And we all might fail at any given time, but we have to try. We have to do our best to keep his law. You try to keep your law all your life and you committed some stupid sin somewhere along the way, you'll be granted mercy, but only he can judge you for that. Martin.
Yep, that was Z at the end of 59.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know if he made it.
Yeah, only 21 verses.
But, well, I mean, that verse 21 is the promise to those who do keep that righteous path, in spite of being oppressed by the wicked. That his spirit would be upon them. There's no other way to seek the favor of God but to keep the law. And people keep trying to fool themselves that there's some way around it, even to change what they conceive or perceive of the law. But in the end, they can't fool him. They can fool themselves, but they're only fooling themselves. Oh, God loves fags. Oh, God loves niggers. Oh, it's okay. We're all one big happy race. We all came from one blood, whatever. They can keep changing their perception of the law, but they're not going to fool God.
Yeah, they have fag churches now. Makes no damn sense.
Makes no sense at all. Incredible. There's no way to change the meaning of arseno koites, so they ignore it. It can't be clear in Romans chapter 1, but Paul was just mean. Jesus wouldn't say that. Wow.
I read an article a couple of months back where they were trying to insinuate, I don't remember where it was. It might have been in a Huff Post or something. Something about Paul. Paul was gay. Paul was clearly gay.
Yep.
What the hell?
They have no shame. These people have no shame. They'll slander anybody for the sake of their own agenda.
Oh, and Jesus was gay because he had a quote-unquote special relationship with James, I believe. And James is his brother, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, James is his brother.
It's absolutely insane.
I thought they would have picked John. It was John leaning on his chest.
You might be right. But yeah, the idea was that he had a special relationship with one of them, and he was gay with them. That was the whole point of it. It was nauseating to read.
The truth is that John must have been very young, and that proves he was very young, because if you read any Greek classics. Intimate relationships between men were not acceptable. But it was fair to have a man have an intimate relationship with a boy. That was acceptable. Even if it was pederasty, it was acceptable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Even in Homer, if you read Homer, the oldest of the epic poets, or at least we believe he's the oldest of the epic poets. Homer, when the first growth appears on a boy's face, his lover has to let him go. Yeah. Homer actually wrote, I don't think he wrote objectively about man-boy relations. I think he was kind of in favor of them. I really do. And Pindar also was in favor of them. He wrote favorably about that shit. But many of the others, Strabo and Diodorus Siculus, they didn't like it. I could tell from their writing they didn't like it.
Yeah, that seems to me you have to be on one side of the fence or the other. Like, you're either for or you're against it.
Yeah, but the problem with the ancient classical Greece and Hellenistic Greece and not so much the Romans, but the Greeks had a very libertarian attitude towards it. They really did. But even in Rome, if it happened, that I never heard of an execution over it. And Ovid was pretty fucking perverted.
Can we do one more?
Nah, we're good. It's 10 o'clock. We did four chapters. Wow. Trying to keep me on overtime.